Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Ashley's Memorial Day mattress sale is going on now. Save big on select adjustable mattress sets, up to $1,200 on Beautyrest Black, up to $800 on Purple, and up to $500 on Tempur-Pedic. Plus, get 72-month special financing with select in-store mattress purchases made with your Ashley Advantage Synchrony credit card between May 14th and June 3rd. Visit your local Ashley store or ashley.com for better sleep and savings. Only at Ashley. Subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. No minimum purchase required. See store for details.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
Live from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Oh, yeah. It's time to get your soap out. Because we gonna get wet.
Get your soap out?
Oh, yeah. You gotta get all sudsy. It's the time to get your nice soap out because it's time for tub time for with UFO Day. I hope you want to talk about some wet UFOs, friend.
I didn't sign up for tub time with UFO Dave. I didn't know
that's
this was
the sound of my belly up against the porcelain.
Oh no! Oh my God!
Hey, Kissel.
Yeah.
So glad you could join me for some UFO talk. You think you could clean my feet?
I just came over here to get some bread.
It's so nice and just submerged in here. I'm like a big old potato inside of a bucket of cream.
All right. Welcome to the last podcast on the left. I am Ben in. Need of bread, along with Henry Zebrowski.
Yum, yum, yum. Soap is soapy. UFOs.
Man, I'm so disgusted. Marcus Parks is with us as well.
Hello.
Man, UFO Dave is one of my new favorite tales. That's one of my new favorite storytellers, rather.
Dave, my full name's David, but I'm Dave to all the men I fuck.
Oh, isn't that nice, UFO Dave? Today, this is going to be such an exciting topic because oftentimes we talk about UFOs, and what's the F stand for? Flying, but today we're going down to the water.
I'm so glad you're here to explain.
Thank you. Today we're talking about unidentified submerged objects.
This is a topic that we have had sitting in the chamber for such a long time that it's actually come all the way back around to being real.
Yeah.
Which is, sometimes my brain just goes into screensaver just thinking about it. I just sit and stare at my wall and just realize, oh, the entire topic is real now. We are actually now talking about the news. Somehow we got to the news.
Wow.
So unidentified submerged objects are exactly what they sound like. Rather than being craft that fly through the air, these objects either travel through the water exclusively, through the air and the water, or are seen stationary in deep lakes or oceans. And I realize that I just said the exact same thing that Ben said in the introduction, except much smarter.
Well, there you go. I clarified it. I made it quick. I made it to the point. That's how you sell stuff.
But you didn't say anything about how the inside of my belly button gets real dry and you gotta put some cream.
UFO Dave, we really can't have you on the whole show. Of course, we expect you to be here, though. USO's unidentified.
My belly button smells like pizza.
I'm sure that it does. Unidentified submerged objects. That's also what they call the Kissel family when we go vacationing in the Florida Keys.
This is great.
And we go into the water. And we submerge ourselves.
Let's continue.
Okay.
Now, what's interesting about USOs is that even though they're one of the least talked about objects in ufology, they actually make up a large part of the more credible sightings.
Because of your recent re-embarkment into the world of UFOs, I will allow you to say ufology.
I say ufology because I prefer to say ufology. It's one of my favorite words.
You're allowed to have it.
You're supposed to say ufology?
Yes.
Well, specifically,
I'm just about to hurricane punch the whole room.
Ufology sounds like it's too selfish.
Yeah, it is, because it's all about you are a part of the investigation. You, my friend, you are half the phenomena.
Okay.
Well, specifically, naval crew members seem to see USOs flying in and out of the water with fair regularity. And if the soft disclosure we've been seeing lately with military footage of UFOs is to be believed, then USOs are key to understanding the current UFO zeitgeist.
This is so current that it's incredible how this is, it's unfolding in front of our eyes right now. Jeremy Corbell, whether you like him or not, he talks a lot over people that are more important than him, and he has a big hat at all times. One of those hipsters, wide-brimmed hats that I can't stand.
Well, those were used to block the human shit that people used to throw out of their windows. That's why those hats exist, yes. Which I always remember.
He helped release some footage last week of a UFO. This was in August of 2019 that was floating above the water, and this has now been claimed by the Pentagon as a leaked official video. You watch this bulb slide down through the sky, blip, through the water, sunk, soak, like a pair of balls in a test jacuzzi, and then blip up out of the water. And you can barely, you see the little splash, go splash. Same thing with the video that I'm showing during our new current live show.
Yes.
The Agua Dulce UFO that was shot, I want to say about 10 years ago, and it's an orb that shut down the Agua Dulce airport in Puerto Rico for 4 hours as it zipped back and forth, and then you watch it blip into the water, blip, out of the water.
Right.
Our U.S. Navymen or seamen right now, they're seeing up to a UFO or USO a week.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of USO sightings.
Yeah, and we're...
It is. It's remarkable that they can say it.
I literally just said the sentence, that's a lot of USO sightings. I did not mean to trigger...
And I'm also gonna say is that lately I've been reading a lot of debunking articles from people that are trying to say that these new videos that are coming out, they're trying to say that, oh, it's just an out of focus airplane, or oh, that's just a camera malfunction. To those people I say, fuck off.
Yes.
I don't know why people are trying so fucking hard to make something so incredible so mundane.
Because
are you doing this?
It's everyone's been in their living rooms for a year. So they're like, oh, that's not my remote control. Oh, that's not my girlfriend, Dana. I don't believe in it.
Wow.
I mean, these things are incredible. They come with multiple witnesses every time. There's so many people who have actually seen these things with their own eyes, even outside of just camera footage. There is something going on. I don't know if it's aliens, but there is something happening right now.
We'll get into it.
Indeed, however, we shall.
However, the stories of USOs are often of the someone saw thing and it was weird variety, meaning that while USO stories are numerous, we're well aware that you, the listener, aren't necessarily interested in a long list of USO sightings.
If you are, though, I would say pick up the delightfully obtuse and nerdy UFOs and Water by Carl W. Faint. He wrote this book in 2014, accidentally tripping upon what is now the most current subject within UFOs, but he lists all of the historical USO sightings over the years, and up until about 2014, he really does a good job. It's hundreds and hundreds of cases. It's wild.
Indeed.
So while we will certainly be talking about legitimate USO sightings, we'll also be discussing a few of the more implausible USO sightings throughout history. Because while a purely scientific point of view can certainly be compelling, it isn't always entertaining.
Yeah.
Now, sightings of USOs are not a new phenomenon and have in fact been occurring for centuries. It's believed that the first USO sighting, or at least the first recorded USO sighting, involved Christopher Columbus, who made a log entry of a quote-unquote wax candle moving up and down beneath the waves of the ocean.
And of course, we can trust anything that Christopher Columbus ever said. He's never made a mistake in his life. He saw it, it was the reality.
He only lied after the trip, because that's what you do. That's what he called his slavery receipts. Afterwards, he wanted to check it with his government.
I see. Yeah. You don't want to keep. Yeah,
if you can't believe a sociopath on the sea, then who can you fucking trust?
But this is also a time period when they didn't know what meteors were or meteorites. Mm. So that's one of those where with Christopher Columbus, that sighting is a little, you know, that one's a little weird.
Wow, I didn't know Debunking Dave was going to join us as well.
Debunking Dave is USO Dave's roommate.
Oh, no kidding. I have a feeling they sleep on a bunk bed as well.
But perhaps the most interesting of these old-timey USO sightings is the Utsurobune, which allegedly was seen near Tokyo in 1803, and what has become a favorite story amongst the ancient aliens crowd because it came complete with drawings of the aquatic craft.
Yeah, this was dope.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, the legend of the Utsurobune, which means hollow boat, appeared in three different texts written approximately 20, 30, and 40 years after the 1803 encounter. But while there are slight differences between the three stories, the narrative essentially remains the same. By accounts, a strange craft with a metallic bottom and a dome top featuring windows fitted with transparent glass was seen drifting aimlessly along the Japanese coast, looking suspiciously like a modern UFO.
Interesting.
Fascinating. Yes.
Curious fishermen towed the craft back to land, and when they looked inside the windows, they saw a beautiful lady between 18 and 20 years old with pale pink skin and red hair, wearing delicate clothing made from unknown fabrics.
I'm from Ireland. This is silk.
Wow, isn't that nice?
When the craft opened, the fishermen saw that the woman was less than 5 feet tall, and when she spoke, she uttered a language that had never been heard on Japanese shores.
How you doing, you fucking sons of bitches? Yeah. It's good to be in Japan!
Oh my god, this is some kind of weird alien.
Yeah!
Wow.
Oh, I love to be in Japan! Where's your beef?
You are out of this world.
The oddest thing about the woman, though, was that she carried a wooden box wherever she went, but refused to let any of the fishermen even touch it, much less let them look inside.
It's my collection of Funko!
You're going to want to hold on.
Don't you want to sell my Funko?
You're going to want to hold on to those Funko. That's going to really go up in value.
I'm in Japan!
I understand. You're a strange Irish woman.
Later, an old man from the fishing village theorized that she could have been a princess from a foreign realm who had an affair with a lowly commoner, and the commoner had been beheaded for defiling the beautiful royal. And as further punishment, the princess was exiled from her lands, encased in the Utsurobune, with the head of her dead lover as company.
Fuck yeah. It's sweet.
But they just really inferred all of that. They made all that up.
That was a guess.
Ah, it was extrapolated from the last time the village had found a woman washed ashore, when another beautiful
foreigner... Well, they have another problem going on here. What is happening? All these women... What are we going to do with all these women washing up on shore?
You got to put up a dike.
And that time, another beautiful foreigner was found carrying her lover's head pinned to a small board.
Oh.
But no matter the origins of this mysterious pale redhead, the townsfolk still popped her back inside the craft and pushed it out to sea.
Get out of here.
Yeah, because they feared that their government would punish them for finding such a mysterious foreign object during a time of intense isolationist Japanese foreign policy.
Hey, I want to teach you how to make submarine sandwiches.
Oh, that would be fantastic. The first Jersey Mike's in Japan. That's how that would begin.
All right, I guess I'm going now. I guess I'll go back to Ireland with my Funkos.
Leave some of the Funkos, please. Especially the Darth Maul. How did the fishermen manage to just snag an unidentified submerged object? How do you just grab something of alien technology with a little fish hook? What did they do?
It was just floating in the water, and then it pulled it ashore.
Yeah, they probably did grab nets, and they probably brought it in. This is, again, when we talk about old-timey UFOs, quite often, the phenomena is either attached to the technology at the time, right, where their psychic connection, whatever it was, whatever that completes the scenario on the human side, basically views whatever their technology is as something that they can compare it to. So they'll say it's like a hollow boat, but it could have looked like anything, because also at the same time, what if the phenomena was this a trickster, which has a trickster nature at its core, always wants to kind of appear as a way that you can kind of understand it, or all of this is allegory.
Yeah.
Well, that really clears it up.
You ask me.
Well, I mean, it, if you look at the drawings, it does look kind of like a modern UFO. Like it, and these drawings were done in 1825. So it's, you know, before any kind of UFO was even in the, you know, collective consciousness.
Okay.
So it's interesting stuff. It's compelling stuff.
Oh.
But it could also be a Russian. That is one of the other theories, that there was a Russian girl put into a hollow boat and just kind of pushed offshore.
Oh, sure.
There was food inside.
Well, that's just a Russian experiment.
Yeah, no. I mean, they do that a lot. They how many dogs are dead? How many women went into space just to explode?
Yeah, they push them off into the water, and then they say, if she comes back, that means she really loves me. But then she doesn't.
No,
she usually
no.
just dies
no.
at sea.
Because she didn't love you. It was about the money. But in Russia, this is in Russia. But in Russia, would you say that they're braver then?
I think they have no moral
I think they
scruples.
Have a, they put a much less of a value on human life.
Braver.
in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely more willing to give, like culturally more willing to give the lives of the few to benefit the many. So I guess there's something there.
I have something that ties into the sentiment later on.
Mm. Interesting.
But besides objects that are found floating out from sea, divers have also found objects of seemingly extraterrestrial origin submerged under the sea itself, long before the idea of UFOs entered the popular consciousness. In 1900, a group of sponge divers exploring the waters around the Greek island of Antikythera found an object that appeared to be simultaneously thousands of years old and highly advanced for the time period.
Oh my God. They referred to it as the Jeffrey Toobin. Look at it now as it jerks off near the coral reef.
Oh, God, I got to get back to my coal.
You have to get back to line on CNN.
I got
to
get on my coal.
Yeah.
When the divers gave the object a closer look, they found that it gave all the appearance of being an ancient analog computer, complete with bronze gears and delicate machinery capable of making precise astrological predictions.
This is one of those other ancient aliens, like big hits.
Yeah. Now, gears and such do admittedly seem a little primitive for an alien civilization, but some believe that the Antikythera mechanism was something similar to NASA's own low-tech golden record, which was sent out with the Voyager spacecraft.
Oh.
Well, also maybe speak to the idea I one day will do the, it might be entirely fake topic of the concept that there was a missing time period. Mm-hmm. Like the idea that the Earth is a lot older and that our civilization is a lot older than it is. And there was like a dark period where there might have been some form of massive catastrophe that led to the fall of a certain like advanced group, which I think it might be interesting.
Well, if the aliens did look at the world now, they would see the dinosaur, right? Because of the time thing.
What?
Space and time, they would look at the world about 6 million years ago.
Are you on edibles right now?
No, that's how that works.
What do you mean?
That's how what works?
Fucking speed of light, dude.
Whoa.
Speed of light and time, man.
I had to
speed of light alters time.
Sometimes, man, I'll fucking
speed of light alters time.
And much like the mRNA that is shedding off of you right now,
so is your
wisdom.
The
Thank
protein
you so
shedding.
Much.
And by the way, everyone, if you're vaccinated, just, you know, enjoy the time you have, because apparently we're all dropping dead this fall. So enjoy this summer.
I've been begging for it.
Yeah, come on.
Begging.
Let's see what happens.
But when it comes to the country that seems to be the worldwide hotspot for USO activity, that designation belongs to Russia.
Russia.
Oh.
Russia. This is my Russian accent.
That's really good.
It's good, right?
Yeah.
They are particularly interested in the USO phenomena to the point where I think that they have the leg up on us, where they seem to understand this phenomena and are vaguely trying to harness it. I'll read a little bit. Once we get past this story, I'm going to read a little bit of what the Russian intelligence communities are working towards with an understanding of our USO community.
This is a question. I was talking about the phenomenon of news coverage of the UFO and USO on Abe Lincoln's Top Hat, not going into the alien components of it. But when it comes to deception, when it comes to misinformation, when it comes to sidestepping, I'm just going to say real issues. Not to discredit anything. Don't look at me like that, Henry. Isn't it interesting, though, as scandals rise, as we have so many issues going on, whatever they might be, choose whichever one you want. All of a sudden, news agencies are covering the USO and the UFO. So if you're in Russia, they've been covering up their own corruption for years. Is it possible they're just using this stuff as smokescreens for something, again, air quotes, real, like, you know, mass violence, war, whatever it might be?
So, no, we'll find
I don't think so. I mean, not in Soviet Russia. In Soviet Russia, they didn't give a fuck. They just lied about everything. And then none of this stuff was really covered in like Soviet state news back in the 70s and 80s when it was happening. The time period that we're going to be covering mostly when we talk about Russian USOs. But I really don't think that UFOs and USOs are used as smokescreens, even here in the United States.
It's just because weird
honestly,
to see Fox
nobody
News.
Fucking cares.
Well,
about
we'll talk
UFOs
about it.
Here yeah. in the United States. Nobody cares.
The one my addition to this conversation is that the people don't care, but Russia and China might in terms of how we hide our covert machinery, what we do to say that we have a special relationship with another worldly intelligence is going to give us a leg up with when it comes to weapons technology. But I think the Russian view on the UFO is specifically they thought we might be able to get something from this if it's real. Like, we might be able to get a weapon out of this.
I just raised my skeptical brow when we have real stories going on with the border and things, and then Fox News is covering it, CNN is covering it. I'm like, you all got a lot of other stuff to cover, too. There should be one network dedicated to just UFOs.
It's us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's us.
Yeah. No, they have 24 hours a day to fill, and UFOs are a really easy story that doesn't take any sort of investigation whatsoever.
Yeah.
For them to cover it, it all comes down to fucking laziness. Every conspiracy theory comes down to human fucking laziness.
Yeah. It's just weird to see Laura Ingraham with her gold cross necklace talking about it.
Of
but
course.
Anyway.
Live from your grave.
My sister is the best gift giver I've ever met of any person. It's Jackie Zabrowski. She shops all year thinking about her family and friends and puts little things aside for their birthdays and Christmases. I have no idea how she does it. I don't know how she do it. But guess what? She always wins Mother's Day, but not this year. I'm coming back. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? I'm taking the crown. All right, give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. I mean this. We have the Aura frame up in my home. We absolutely love it. I can put photos on it very, very easily through the app. It's fun to do. And the memories keep cycling and I get emotional. And we filled it with pictures of Carmi and Wendy. And that is not sad. That is celebratory. So you should try it. It's honestly a really good product. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code LEFT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Finding work-life balance can be tough, but Squarespace gives you the tools to reach your goals and have time to celebrate. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, you can select from curated layout and styling options to create a personalized website optimized for every device. Get your website discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools. Plus, make checkout easy for customers with easy-to-use payment tools. And with Squarespace AI, you can explain what your site is about, choose your tone, enter what you need, and get auto-generated text. And that helps you save time. I know I'm sitting on about 2 literal wheelbarrows filled with horse pics. Now, part of the issue has been is a lot of these pictures are getting stopped at customs because some of them do depict various world leaders in horse-like circumstances that seems to be pinging a lot of these custom agents' accounts. Now, so what I've done to do is like, so while I'm trying to work on hand smuggling these horse pics over various country borders, I then also have time because Squarespace is doing all the other ad work for me to go and work on my killdozer at home. So thank you, Squarespace, for allowing me to diversify in the best way possible for this country. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial when you're ready to launch. Go to squarespace.com/left to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
On recently declassified Russian Navy reports on Cold War UFO sightings, it was revealed that the majority of sightings occurred near bodies of water, with 50% being connected with the oceans and 15% being connected to lakes.
Water and UFOs are absolutely related. More than anything else. More than them saying the underwater water aquifers, more than saying like a weird like magnetic points or ley lines or any of that horseshit, they are either under us or they are around us, but they love the water.
Okay.
Could it also be, this is something that I was thinking, could it also be that there are more UFO sightings around water because humans tend to congregate around water?
Well, I don't know, because it's also a lot of times where they are congregating is around our military technology, which is water-based. So that some of it probably has quite to do with, if it is an intelligent thing that is interested in our military technology, that's where it kind of gravitates.
I mean, I think it'd be cute to see the aliens with a little sunscreen on their noses just be like, we come to spring break, like we just come to party.
Help reinvigorate our economy, aliens.
Absolutely.
Wasn't that the whole plot of Earth Girls Are Easy?
Yes.
You know, I forget the plot of Earth Girls Are Easy.
Yeah.
But like we have here in America with astronauts who believe aliens fly the skies, there are certain Russian cosmonauts who fully believe that alien civilizations have settled beneath our seas. Famed cosmonaut Pavel Popovich gave an oddly specific interview in the 90s in which he discussed ancient advanced civilizations that have visited the Earth from a world called either Phaeton or Muna.
That second one's lazy.
Yeah, it's Italian for moon.
Okay.
From what Pavel claimed, the visitors had one base near Saturn and three on Earth. One in the Andes, one in the Himalayas, and one deep in a trench in the Indian Ocean, which became the main base when humans came too close to discovering the other two. They got liquidated.
There's a lot of these guys that come out. We've talked about a little bit on Side Stories. I believe it was one of the head of intelligence for, we definitely in the UK.
The Canadian minister.
And the Canadian minister of intelligence, they also came forward and said this type of information, saying we are speaking to, and we're a part of a galactic federation. We're speaking to other aliens openly, knowing that they are aliens. They are coming here. We're doing some form of goods trading and the intelligence trading. But it's weird because number one, is that just a psyop? Or is there another way? I have this like image in my head where they are actually in contact with high levels of our government, right? Whatever these creatures are, whatever these entities are. And they come in and they lie about where they're from.
Yeah.
And that you have it. Like, this is double yeah, down, man. Conspiracy world.
Playing 8D chess. All I know is the aliens told me the storm is coming.
Oh,
isn't
no.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Actually,
and where we go one, we go all. That's what the aliens told me. Yeah.
The humidity is actually up.
Isn't that nice?
In my brain.
And when it comes to Russian USO sightings, they go all the way back to the 17th century. In the year 1663, the Tsar at the time, Alexei Mikhailovich, heard a great noise resounding from the sky when he was visiting Robo Zero Lake in the Vologda region of Russia.
All of these are incorrectly pronounced. Pronunciated.
We have Robo Zero Lake is awesome, though.
I'm
Robo
sure
Zero Lake
it's probably
is cool.
Robo Zero. Robo Zero. Robo Zero Lake, bro. Come on.
We come for spring break.
Well, the Tsar, when he heard the sound, he looked north and saw a huge flaming sphere 40 meters in diameter, emitting two beams of flame from the front and blue smoke from its sides. And lest ye think it was a meteor, the Tsar himself saw the object hovering above the lake. Pretty soon, locals emerged from a nearby church, and thinking it was the end of the world, they fled back into the church to pray.
You just came out of church!
You gotta go back, it's the end of the world!
But regardless of prayer, the object hovered over Robo Zero Lake in various locations for an hour and a half before it vanished.
Oh my God, dude. Now I'm getting horny for BattleBots again. We'll name our BattleBot Robo Zero. Have flames.
Yeah.
We have to have shadow. Smoke.
Ooh,
like
diversion tactics.
Yes, diversion tactics.
And then how about like a thing that flaps up and it's got naked tits on it?
Now, it's obvious that if you do accept that something is out there, then whatever is out there is mostly interested in humanity's military operations, because it seems that the Russians have had just as many run-ins with unidentified objects both in the air and in the sea as America has. During the height of the Cold War in the 1960s, Soviet nuclear submarines began encountering strange underwater objects that they called kvakeri, from the Russian word kvakat, which means to croak.
Yeah, man. Frog people, dude.
Frog people?
Frog people, bro. Amphibian man is coming, dude.
Are you kidding? Amphibian man?
What's funny is we're going to get to amphibian man here pretty soon.
Yep.
Wow.
From accounts, the Russians gave it the croaking designation because the objects emitted signals that sounded to the Russians like frogs croaking, although that was the extent of communication from said objects.
And we know these weren't mines, these weren't military dropped mines?
We don't know.
Yeah. Now, it was thought that the kvakeri were possibly underwater sonic buoys controlled by the U.S. Navy. But like current UFOs seen by the U.S. Navy, the kvakeri possessed amazing maneuverability in addition to reaching speeds of up to 200 knots.
Wow.
For comparison, the world's fastest submarine, the Soviet K-222, had a top speed of 44.7 knots, and the kvakeri matched the speed of the fastest unmanned submersible object, a German torpedo named the Barracuda.
I meant a German name. Barracuda, and all he did was have sex with me.
Oh my goodness. I do like that we name all of our missiles. Like, it's kind of cute if it's a Barracuda, right?
It's cute. These are along the lines of weird behavior from things that are either manned ships, or in my mind, I've been tripped up on this idea that some of these orbs are physical manifestations of a psychic projection from other things, other intelligences.
Gotta get this world to open up.
Now, I am saying that they are observing us from afar using these things like orbs that are actually unmanned. They are unmanned.
That's like the witch in Robin Hood. That's like the witch in Robin Hood with the pool of water, and she can look and stuff and see the future.
Walt Disney was a student. Pool.
Surely, yes. Walt Disney was a student of the occult, and there's a lot of occult teachings laid within Disney films.
There's a lot of hidden penises too.
Yes, there are, because they're always looking to jerk off. They're just drawing and drawing and drawing all day, and they never get to draw full tits. But I really do think that these things are hidden underground. We'll get it again. I'm gonna keep talking about this for a while.
I have a feeling.
Now, some didn't take the kvakeri phenomenon seriously and joked that the radar signatures and sounds were merely playful lobsters fornicating.
You know how much lobsters fuck and how loud it is. You ever live next door to a lobster couple? You can't even sleep. It's just... they just fucking come. They're and just fucking come and play music and play the drums.
That's our playful lobster neighbor fornicating.
Speaking of playful lobster, Sebastian the Crab's fucking dead.
Sebastian died. We broke the news yesterday.
The guy who played Sebastian the Crab's dead, dude.
Yep, he died. Sebastian got cancer.
Does nothing for me.
Isn't that sad? No. You don't think that's a little sad?
No.
No?
I didn't know him.
What do you mean, no?
I didn't know him. He's a guy that did a voice in a cartoon that I was fine with.
He's cold as ice.
Looking to sacrifice.
I'm sorry, I can't cry for every bad thing that ever happened.
I don't even
Jesus
necessarily.
Christ.
It may have been a very good thing. Maybe he was very ill. Death can often be a wonderful embrace.
Suicide by cop.
Okay. I don't know what happened.
Well, but while some people joke that it was just lobsters, others called the kvakeri the ghosts of the ocean.
Sweet.
And more than one story existed of a croaking kvakeri ramming a Soviet nuclear submarine.
They're very interesting, or at least attempting to. They love our technology. Whatever they are. And I've said this
specifically nuclear technology.
They're obsessed with our nuclear technology. And we don't know whether or not it's just because of the energy they kind of give off. If they are able, maybe that's the only way, the only things that they can see. Maybe that's what they can see these things and they want to go look at it. Maybe they are aping it, like kind of what we talk about with the Rendlesham incident, where they go and they copy our planes to be like us.
However, the kvakeri is not the fastest underwater objects the Soviets ever recorded. That designation belonged to something they never even had a name for. On several occasions, Soviet subs clocked underwater objects traveling at 230 knots, which translates to 250 miles per hour with water resistance. It's almost impossible.
It's wow. It's almost completely impossible. Now, also seeing them shift from, the hard part is shifting from air to water and how often these things do it. How they come from the sky and they somehow, without losing speed, just slice through the water, which is something to speak to. Like, they must be covered with some kind of energy field, which is what UFOs in water talks about. It's a magnetic field that goes in two little circles on either side of it, like fun balls.
I've done a few belly flops in my day, and I think we all know water, it hits hard.
It's hard.
So yeah. That is interesting.
It's the reason why you die when you jump off a bridge.
Oh, I thought it was just because your heart gives out.
There's a whole bunch of reasons, I guess.
When it comes to USOs in Russia, however, the center of activity is not the Black Sea, but is rather the deepest lake in the entire world, Lake Baikal.
This is sweet.
Cool.
Now, Lake Baikal is truly a marvel of nature. Sitting at a depth of an entire mile at its darkest point, Lake Baikal holds 20% of the world's fresh water, yet it still freezes over completely every winter owing to the fact that it is located in Siberia near the Mongolian border.
I believe it's also a vacation spot.
Yeah. It absolutely is during the summer and during the winter, because if you look at pictures of it online, it is a true wonder of nature. The kind of ice formations that it has on the water, it's beautiful. It's amazing.
But Siberia is where you go to work yourself to death, correct?
Well, you can go train
to fight. Were.
Yeah, or you can go train to fight Ivan Drago. You can go to Siberia, get yourself in the Russian headspace.
Do people like Siberia? Are there like signs that say like, welcome to Siberia? Is there like downtown Siberia? Like it's like no sea and like do sea. Like do they have that? Is there like funky fresh like diners, drive-ins and dives there?
No, it's a massive, massive, mostly unpopulated area because it is mostly uninhabitable.
Oh, well.
There has to be one guy.
Right?
That's it.
There's got to be one guy.
There's got to be one guy.
Rasputin was from Siberia.
Oh, I know that. But I wonder if nowadays, because with the ever-reaching arm of Guy Fieri, that he would not be able to inspire somebody to create some kind of like chicken and waffles joint or some form of like flatbread mixed with make your own pastrami kind of place in the middle of Siberia.
Diners, drive-ins, and gulags.
Ooh, cool.
Well, UFOs have actually been seen near Lake Baikal or over Lake Baikal since the 19th century, when locals spotted a gigantic glowing sphere with numerous portholes hovering above the enormous body of water.
I do love that sighting because they do. I remember that reading about that sighting and they said the numerous portholes. They're like the holes in our shacks.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, because you remember, this is the late 19th century. This is the 1800s. People do not have references
for what they're
seeing in the skies. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Not too long after, in 1904, black objects of almost every classic UFO shape were spotted above Lake Baikal, from the cigar-shaped craft to the nebulous sphere, all performing complex maneuvers far beyond the imagination of the early 20th century Siberian railroad workers who spotted them.
The shamrock, the butt plug,
whoa!
Spaghetti. Have you just seen it? It just looks like a lump of spaghetti. You got a guy, it just looks like a full naked man. Have you ever seen one?
I did.
Just a full naked man just going, how did I get
it? Oh my God, is that the spaghetti?
50 years after the black object incident, a TU-104 passenger jet, presumably carrying no passengers, crashed into Lake Baikal after being pursued by an unknown metallic vehicle, or so the story goes.
Very similar to the Kolaris story that we covered. Mm.
Well, according to reports, the frantic pilot radioed a distraught message to air traffic controllers saying that he was under attack. And fishermen on the lake saw a silver flying saucer chase the plane until it finally plummeted into the water.
Wow. You know what I love about fishermen is that they look up, they see this UFO attacking a plane, and the plane eventually crashes about 50 feet from them, and they just keep going, they're biting today. It just goes right, it's just peaceful.
The fisherman is very focused.
However, despite the fact that there were numerous witnesses to this event, no conclusive evidence or even an official record of the crash has ever surfaced. But cover-ups of accidents were sadly all too common in the old Soviet regime, as we all saw with the Chernobyl disaster.
I love that HBO show. I didn't even ask for more disasters if I could get more episodes of that show.
Yeah, they did a horrible job of covering that up. There's a movie based on it. There's a whole bunch of stuff.
They tried for a while. It was just a little bit too big. It was when entire swaths of people started getting cancer that they couldn't really cover up how bad it was.
They got that one shirt that says, "Hey, I visited Chernobyl and all I got was the second dick."
All right, guys, hear me out. What if we create a huge rug, put it over Chernobyl, literally sweep it under the rug?
Vladimir, you first are promoted. Then we execute.
No! Wait, what?
So about 15 years after the alleged plane crash, there were reports of a glow over Lake Baikal that could not be attributed to weather or couldn't be attributed to optical illusions caused by a sunset. And on that same night, an anti-aircraft missile unit was attacked by a mysterious foe. Apparently, the military lost all communication capabilities as a fiery orange sphere the size of our sun ascended over the horizon, pulsating as if it were alive.
Cool.
In the year after the pulsating sphere, a cigar-shaped object 250 meters long by estimates was seen silently flying over Lake Baikal. By reports, it released three radiant spheres colored yellow, pink, and blue, and all three flew off in different directions before the cigar-shaped craft disappeared.
UFOs in water has an interesting theory. UFOs in water, he tries to explain some various phenomena that the USOs exhibit and how, in a very nuts and bolts matter, in a basic way, he's trying to kind of wrap his head around how do these things work physically, which is also what our U.S. government is spending millions of dollars currently. The $22 million that came out of that was given to ATIP to research UAP was all about how do we replicate what they do? How do we make a ship that can go from the air into the water and up, right, without losing any speed so we could kill. But eventually we could put people on it and it's a new cruise ship.
Oh, that's nice. Carnival.
But UFOs in water, the way it's very basic, he tries to explain it with some math that just made me glaze over. But what he is trying to say is that they are some form of magnetic propulsion system that has, in his words, an on and off switch. Hmm. That at night, when it's on, you can see the craft. At night, you would actually see the lights that you commonly see with UFOs. Is that when it's up there, the ionization effect of the magnetic field around it makes things, elements in our air make it glow different colors. And so something that is a thing that's a big glowing craft, that you know how sometimes we see UFOs that shit out little colors, they shit out little things, is that they all have their magnetic field on. And that in daytime, when we see a craft, more often than not, it's because this system would be on versus off. And that when they shut the system off, it goes invisible.
Is it possible that they're unloading lavatory waste?
It is very possible.
It's possible.
There's also the idea that any UFO that comes here crashes. And that when it does crash, it's the reason why this is an actual posited theory that they are, in fact, space tourists or a B and C team groups that come. They keep their A team and they send the B team to essentially come and investigate, see what happens. And a lot of times the reason why they crash, it's because it's Larry's son, Craig, who never should have gotten UAP license.
I hate nepotism so much, especially on an alien level. Interestingly enough, on more of a terrestrial level, we need to do an audit of the Pentagon. It's never happened before.
It's coming.
Many people.
It's due next month.
They're pushing for it. We'll see if Biden allows it. But everyone from Bernie Sanders to Mike Lee, different political affiliations completely, are for it. But we'll see if the powers that be allow it to happen. I don't think Biden will do it.
Biden came out this morning saying he is. He is pro the UAP investigation.
He also said he was going to cancel student debt.
You guys are talking about two entirely different things.
That's different. Yeah, that's different. He can easily
so
say
talking
yes
about
to the
a
UFO.
Full audit of the Pentagon, like every single budget item of the Pentagon. And Henry, you're talking about the UFO report that's coming out, supposed to come out in June.
Yeah, the important thing. the important piece of it.
Anyway, yes, but I do think it would be nice to know, where is the money going? The Pentagon has never been audited, and it seems... Mm-hmm. Across all political affiliations, people want that to happen. We'll see if it does. I'm skeptical.
Wait a second. Who's spending $25 at Tender Greens? General.
I would love to know where the money's going. They just got $740 billion.
Live from your grave.
Well, besides aircraft, civilians who live near Lake Baikal have reportedly had close encounters of the third kind.
Ooh.
Near the village of Kudara Simon, just south of Lake Baikal, multiple witnesses saw three people in shining yellow suits disembark from an actual flying saucer.
Oh.
One witness, named Marina Zimareva, said that they were slender and tall, more humanoid than the short grays that we so often run into here in America. More like tall whites.
Okay.
She said that they walked down steps that folded out of the saucer and did so with the same gait as a human.
Or can we get some kind of railing? Because one of us is going to slip, and I don't want one of these humans to see us fall.
Absolutely.
That's why we should be floating. Well, I need you to think, we are trying to walk here. I'm walking here.
Aww. I didn't come all the way to Earth to not fucking walk.
This
I came
cool
here
for
to
me.
Walk.
This is cool. I get to walk here.
Also, could they float here with the gravitational pull of Earth?
That's why they're walking. Because
exactly.
the gravity is so much fucking stronger.
Out of the mouths of babes.
All right. That is a large baby.
He's still hungry for milk. Oh, God, he's coming for the milk.
Well, after the three aliens, or whatever they were, after the three beings that were dressed in yellow disembarked, three more beings, using the same gait, wearing orange suits, also disembarked.
They're the bosses.
Are they?
But when the beings saw that people were watching nearby, they quickly scampered back to their ship and flew away.
We gotta go put our scary costumes on. We shouldn't be seen like this.
Yeah, they just got
they
scared.
They just saw Dark Star float.
Oh,
all right? You know what? We want to walk. It's embarrassing that we can't walk.
But when it comes to Lake Baikal, the most unbelievable story is, as always, the one with the most plot. And it allegedly occurred deep under the waters of this massive lake in 1982. Now, about 5 years before the event in the early 80s, two researchers named Alexandrov and Selivarstov.
That's
very difficult names.
Yeah, they sound like people that are like competitors in Eurovision.
Oh.
Well, they plunged into Lake Baikal in a submersible device and reached a depth of 3/4 of a mile. And once they were in the darkest abyss, the scientists turned off their spotlights to measure the depth of sunlight penetration.
Let me check. Actually, let's check the instruments. Apparently, the sunlight is, it is balls deep.
Wow. I'm so happy to be submerged in a submarine, not able to escape with a fucking comedian.
Look,
this is great to be here with you.
The sunlight has gotten all the way down to the bush hairs.
Yeah. Wow, this is great. This is fun. You do improv on the weekends, you said.
Well, yes, I do. State mandated improv where I always, the ends always, where we love Mother Russia.
Very fun. Very fun.
But suddenly, the scientists were bathed in an unusual glowing light. They later claim that it was as if their device was lit from above and the sides by strong spotlights. And after about a minute, the floodlights suddenly switched off and the aquanauts once again found themselves in total darkness.
And then you've been gotten used to the dark and then the light hits you and shuts off and then you're like double blind.
Right. Yeah.
Now, it's obvious that something strange was going down at Lake Baikal.
Something wrong. Room in the room. Outside is the storm.
The storm. But the
I don't even. What is that even from?
Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters 2. Yeah, it's the Bobby. It's a Bobby Brown song.
Oh, okay. Mm, whatever happened to him?
He's dead.
I think we can move on.
The whole family's dead. No, wait, no, he's alive.
Yeah, he's
it's
he's
the
alive.
The rest of the family's dead.
I'll never forget that episode where they admitted that he sometimes sticks his finger up Whitney Houston's butt when she gets constipated.
Yeah.
But
let's just go.
The ultimate USO.
Yeah, the ultimate submerged object. All right.
But the Soviet military still chose this large body of water for training military frogmen, Or so the story goes. In 1982, seven divers attached to the Soviet military descended deep into Lake Baikal. But once they reached a depth of 50 meters, they were suddenly and unexpectedly faced with three other mysterious humanoid creatures. By the accounts of the survivors, these creatures appeared to be 9 feet tall and wore tight-fitting silvery suits and simple helmets on their heads, similar to what a cosmonaut might wear.
They weren't connected to any oxygen. They no had aqualung. No ship, no aqualung. There was nothing there. And in a way, this is why I really do think the phenomenon is interesting. It's as if they hastily put together an underwater costume. It's kind of like they mirror what we are already doing. There was a book. It's like The Crystal World by J.G. Ballard, where it is a phenomena. Basically, people go down. The story of the book is that people go down to this part of the jungle that is becoming all crystalline, and people are becoming obsessed with it, and kind of essentially like the movie Annihilation, where people are going and getting lost and hypnotized by this world, and it's kind of subtly aping our world. It's trying to copy us, and I really think that's the heart of the phenomenon, is that it looks at, it's trying to connect to our intelligence by copying us.
Like Evil Ash did with Ash.
Yes.
Interesting. So what do you mean? Did they go to Joanne's Fabric or something? To buy the clothes.
To go to Halloween City.
Okay.
Now, it was obvious that these creatures were not threatening in any way whatsoever, and they really just seemed curious. But even so, when the men returned to the surface, the commander of the training mission ordered his men to return to the water to capture one of the subaqueous creatures for further study.
Russians are, they like weird experiments. Because they also, remember when they tried to make the ape human soldiers?
Mm-hmm.
They just want to get one, and they want to make it communist.
Now, these creatures were intriguing to the commander because he was a particularly big fan of a film adaptation of an old Soviet novel about a shark boy that was called Amphibian Man.
Yes. Okay, so that's what I'm saying. It's not like every idea they have is good. No. I would argue 99.9% of them have been absolutely comically stupid.
They think outside of the box. Sometimes when you're super creative, sometimes you're also at the very bottom of stupidity as well. But that's where you can really surprise yourself with how stupid you can be.
All right.
But this is a real book. Aquaman that was written, Amphibian Man, that was written by Alexander Bailiov. This is written in 1928. And so it's about an Argentinian doctor, Salvador, a scientist and a maverick surgeon, gives his son, Ichthyander, a set of shark gills.
I don't think I'm going to a maverick surgeon.
It's the new Jason Momoa movie.
Jeez.
Well, in the film that the commander was so in love with, a scientist saves his son's life by transplanting shark lungs into his body. But since the boy has shark lungs, he can't visit the surface anymore. Then he falls in love with a girl, and there's a jealous lover, and so on and so forth. I plan on showing the 5-minute trailer to this movie, my next mandate, on our Patreon YouTube stream.
Okay.
It's fucking great.
Love it.
But the point here is that the commander, apparently, by some accounts, wanted to see if the shark boy from his favorite movie was real.
You gotta listen to the general.
It's just...
He was a one-issue voter. Shark boy real?
Right. But he was in charge of a lot of, like, weapons and people and stuff, right?
It's sometimes how you get to the very top is having... You just have to have a goal in mind.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, armed only with a large net, the men descended into Lake Baikal.
Can we get some guns or something? We don't want to hurt Shark Boy. He only wants to love. He only wants to go back to the surface.
It's like, Commander, I just feel like we should have a gun. Or
I just feel bad for Shark Boy. He can never stop moving or he's going to die.
I should get him a birthday cake. He has probably never had an online birthday celebration.
I actually completely agree. Agree with you on that. Get him a wet birthday cake.
And once the divers again located the creatures, the man with the net attempted capture. Essentially, it was just get her.
It was the Ghostbusters. Everybody's been doing Ghostbusters.
But as it turned out, this was an extraordinarily bad plan for capturing a 9-foot-tall fish man. As soon as the net was flung, the creatures responded by pulling out some sort of sonic weapon, which knocked the seven divers unconscious and sent them shooting to the surface at incredible speeds.
Do you remember the story of Phil Schneider?
Yeah.
Who also got zapped by some form of laser pressure weapon that gave him the wonky hand and gave him the body, all the scarred body that he showed at UFO conventions. So everyone go, which is sad, though, because at the same time, he should have been proud of his body. He earned those scars.
Well, he kept on showing it. I think he was proud of it. That's his moneymaker.
Take a look at this. It was his closer. He always go like, and then you could see what happened to my belly. And everyone's like, no.
Now, anyone who has any knowledge of scuba diving knows that a human body can't handle coming up from the depths of a body of water too fast, lest they suffer from a dreaded condition known as the bends.
Yeah, if you get the bends, what happens is you create over 15 concept albums, each filled with weirder and weirder collages of noise, and it gets to the point, is this even music?
You making a Radiohead joke, bro?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, A Moon-Shaped Pool is an underrated album. It's a great fucking album. It's awesome.
It's fine. It's good. It's good. I know people like Radiohead, and I'm fine with Radiohead. It's just very sad.
Well, but it's also, it can also make you happy.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny how sometimes, like how you listen to rage metal to calm down?
Yes.
Sometimes you listen to a little Townes Van Zandt, a little Radiohead, sad music, but it offsets your sadness, and then you can be happy.
Create something sweeter.
Yeah. The Bends got me through high school.
Wow.
It was one of my favorite albums in high school. Let's do it over and over and over again.
You know what got me through high school? The musical Rent.
See, when humans come up from deep waters too fast, there are rapid changes in pressure, and those rapid changes can cause nitrogen gas bubbles to form in the bloodstream, causing permanent physical damage in mild cases of the bends and death in extreme cases. And since all 7 Lake Baikal divers had been allegedly shot to the surface by a sonic weapon, all 7 had the bends and were in desperate need of a decompression chamber to save their lives. Problem was, only one such chamber existed in the region, and it was designed to only treat 2 people at a time. So, in true Soviet fashion, 4 of the 7 men were piled into the chamber while the other 3 were left to die.
Jesus,
and since
Christ.
The decompression chamber was only made for 2 people, the 4 who managed to spot were rendered invalids for the remainder of their lives.
Man, they just really... They just
nobody wins.
They don't really care in Russia. They really just don't give a shit. Not that we care that much. I mean, we gave the Tuskegee that whole story of the Tuskegee airmen just giving syphilis to see if they die or not was also fucked up. So I guess we learn from them.
Tuskegee.
Tuskegee.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you for fucking changing my pronunciation.
No problem. I'm just doing it before they do.
Yeah, you're right.
But what's interesting about this incident is that as unbelievable as it sounds, it was actually described in detail in recently declassified Soviet files, or so says esteemed ufologist and former Soviet naval officer Vladimir Azhaza.
This is true, because the Russians, they are trying to get really involved in the UFO conversation as well. And into way before us, because that's where the PSYOP kind of comes in, where what is Russia's gain from also coming forward and saying, actually, we really have spent a lot of time researching UFOs? Because in my mind, it's whether or not all of this shit is real or not. Both countries, US and Russia, want to be the only ones with access to whatever technology this so-called other intelligence might provide. And whoever gets the first get at it gets the tactical advantage.
Yeah, that'll be a tough one. Did that dog that they sent up in space when the Russians sent that? Yeah, did that dog ever come down, or is that
that dog's skeleton is still orbiting the Earth?
So at some point, is it going to get out of our? Is it going to be out of our atmosphere? Is that going to be some really horrible gift to an alien planet where they're like, "Wow, this is from Earth. I wonder what they sent us," and it's just a dead dog, and then they'll be like, "What is this? Some kind of Italian?" Is this an Italian message that we're all going to die soon? Like the horse head.
Oh, now I understand. I thought you meant the dead dog skeleton, some form of Italian. Like, they just didn't understand. They just thought all Italians
didn't clarify it
look
very
like
well.
Fucking, was it little Jack Russells?
I'm just saying, all the aliens know about us right now is that we gift dead dogs. So don't be surprised when they come and just be like, why are all these people upset that we give them all these dead dogs? We'd be like, it's really traumatizing for us because we love dogs, but they won't get it. Thinking about.
Now, eventually, we're going to have to clean up all the space junk because we have littered space quite a bit. There's a whole bunch of crap floating around the Earth. Eventually, we'll go up and scoop it all up. And like a skeleton, will probably end up in a museum somewhere someday.
That'd be sweet.
But furthermore, the major general in charge of this diving mission rushed to nearby Isikku Lake to warn the local military against approaching any aquatic creatures. And soon after that, a bulletin listed numerous deepwater lakes where anomalous phenomena like the underwater creatures, the crafts, and the underwater luminescence all occurred, warning military officials to keep an eye out. For example, the town of Borisoglebsk, between Moscow and the Black Sea.
I love Borisoglebsk because they have such good chains there.
Oh, absolutely.
Have you seen their chains?
Popeyes, the whole nine.
No, I'm talking about just metal chains.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely.
Well, they had encounters with creatures similar to those seen underwater at Lake Baikal. During the 80s, multiple objects were seen flying in the skies above this small town. And in 1982, the same year of the Lake Baikal encounter, military personnel spotted a 10-foot-tall humanoid running around in a clearing in a forest after the crash of a MiG-21 fighter jet.
Oh, you can just see it like, ah! It's horrified.
From what witnesses said, the creature was dressed in silvery clothing and fled after it was seen.
Oh, God, I should have worn my better shoes.
This is embarrassing for the alien.
And soon after, an explosion was felt as a luminous object took off from the ground, leaving a glowing trail of light behind it. And in 1990, people in Borisoglebsk saw these giant humanoids again. And not too long after that, a fisherman in the Black Sea saw a gigantic, milky white humanoid with giant, bulging eyes waving at him with membrane hands before it swam away.
Hey, have you ever had yourself a Hot Pocket?
Oh, Jim Gaffigan. That's great.
Now, as far as what these creatures could be, the first instinct is always that it's a misidentification of an animal, much like how many people dismiss cryptid sightings as owls or bears or mangy dying dogs.
Sometimes they are mangy dogs.
Sometimes. And sometimes they are owls.
Sometimes. The harpy owl.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that often gets mistaken for a Mothman for some reason from people that are generally very scared and they're something's wrong with them.
It's scary, man. It's a huge-ass owl.
And there is indeed an aquatic mammal native to Lake Baikal. That would be the Baikal seal, known locally as the Nerpa.
Oh, Nerpa!
Oh, I love the Nerpa. He's so cute. The way he likes chicken tendies. And he likes jalapeno poppers.
That's what I like. I like appetizers.
Oh, I love you, Nerpa.
It's like little dinners.
I
and
know.
You get so many of them and no one says anything because it's just appetizers.
And the thing is, dinner hasn't even come yet. Yeah. You're eating food.
I hate entrees.
I know.
It's too much food at once.
It's time for a dino blast.
However, the Nerpa is only 4 feet long, and considering how there are between 80 and 100,000 Nerpas in Lake Baikal, it's unlikely that the doomed divers we spoke of earlier weren't familiar with Nerpas. But even if that story is a little too fantastic for some of our more skeptical listeners out there, we do actually have evidence that something strange is happening at Lake Baikal. And
something
it's supported
wrong. Gloom in the room.
Outside
that is
a stone. And it's supported by your precious photographs.
Your precious evidence. I require all of this evidence.
Well, you do need evidence.
You didn't see me
do
quotation marks.
I actually did. I actually wasn't turned until there was actual evidence.
Okay.
Well, you know,
yeah.
Well, in 2009, the International Space Station photographed two circular convection breaks in the 4 foot thick winter ice at Lake Baikal, which appeared to be created by something ascending from the depths.
Look at the Hot Pocket.
It's Jim Gaffigan.
The circular breaks, which surfaced miles away from each other, were 3 miles in diameter and oddly symmetrical. And while some think that it's from methane being released below the surface, no one knows for sure what actually caused it. Look up these photos. They're incredible.
Whoa, holy fucking shit. What is this?
Did you not see those?
No, now I'm looking at it.
Yeah, whoa. Dude, it is fucking crazy.
That's not cool. That looks like buttholes, but bigger and meaner and colder.
Wow, I'm so happy that you looked at those so we could get your expertise on it.
Hey, man, I'm not a part of MUFON anymore. I don't need to describe this for my paperwork.
Well, even as recent as 2016, multiple people saw a mysterious bright object moving slowly through the skies near Lake Baikal. far too slowly to be a meteorite or a spent rocket stage.
Can I read a little bit of how the Russian government is working with this intelligence? This
Please.
Is where, so they really have spent a lot of time studying USOs and their relationships to the water and to their military technology. And Jacques Vallée often talks about this concept of UFOs as a control mechanism. He has this belief that these entities, whatever this phenomena shows up, what it is like a control mechanism, like the temperature gauge in your house, right? Where if you set it a cool temperature, like for a specific like range, so let's say it's 71 degrees in your house, if it's on cool, if it rises to 71 degrees, the mechanism turns on so that it cools to go down, right? Same thing opposite for heat. He's saying that the UFOs are something like that. They appear to us to either control our behavior for some reason, whatever their agenda is. But what the Russian intelligence community is trying to say is that they are figuring out, and it's might be what our own government is also working on that we have not really broached yet, is we are working out a way to communicate and to control the controlling mechanism. This is a sentence that came from an article that I read on the Hermetic Penetrator, who wrote this.
That was my nickname in high school.
This comes from Lou Elizondo first saying,
but you don't love him.
I doubt Lou Elizondo.
Okay.
But he said something that was interesting. He alluded to this idea that the Soviet government might be trying to communicate with this phenomena. And he shat out this comment. But then a man named General Vasily Alexeyev, who is the former Soviet Air Force general, has come forward and said, this is what we're doing. This is what they are trying to do. Individual officers and commanders on the spot who knew about the phenomenon and had no official instructions on the matter acted on their own initiative to investigate UFOs. So he's saying that this is before they became official in any way, shape, or form. I know that in some places, they even learned to create a situation where they would deliberately provoke the appearance of a UFO. So what they would do is they would bring out a nuclear weapon in a field. This is what they say that they did. And then the UFOs would show up. And they would do it by the water. And they said they would pop up out of the water. A UFO would appear where there was increased military activity connected, say, with the transportation of a quote-unquote special loads, right? Ooh. So in other words, some kind of conditional relationship emerged. And what they would do, the UFO appeared. In most instances, it was a sphere. But there were other kinds. Contact was achieved with the help of physical indications of behavior. Pointing your arms in various directions, say, and the sphere became flattened in the same direction. If you raised your arms three times, the UFO would flatten out in a vertical direction three times as well. So the Soviets, whether this is PSYOP or not, whether this is all bullshit coming from them, they are saying we can talk to them by making rabbit hands.
Yeah, isn't that like the flag waving? Like, yes. What is that called?
Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It's the same mechanism, which is also why people think Spielberg knew people within the intelligence community that has been talking about this very subject for a very long time. This is one of those things where your brain starts going, whoa.
Or did they take it from him?
I don't know that's whether exactly. They took the idea from the movies and then used it within the intelligence community. But he's saying this was all in the early 1980s.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't J. Allen Hynek a consultant on Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
He was.
Yeah.
I don't
know if we can trust these.
But
that's
not really a secret, though. That was in the credits.
Oh, of course. But I'm saying they hid it within a fiction movie, saying, we've come up with these systems to communicate with various UFOs. And because it's in one of Spielberg's fancy little summer blockbusters, nobody would believe that it's actually fact. That is even more strange than fiction.
Indeed, yeah, but they can't make it a documentary. No one would watch it.
Well, Steven Spielberg was trying to make a documentary about Russian UFOs. He was apparently, and then it all got kiboshed.
I read that was a rumor that was not true.
That's all Hollywood.
Interesting, though. Okay, so take that with a grain of salt, but that is fascinating stuff coming from the Russians.
Isn't it?
It is. No need to get defensive, Henry.
But as far as USOs and the rest of the world go, we've had more than our fair share here in North America, the most famous of which being the Shag Harbor incident in Nova Scotia in the fall of 1967.
It turned out to be a man, baby.
Such an asshole.
Man, I'm the best.
I'm happy that someone finally said it.
You know what? I'll go ahead and say, Henry, I don't know if you're the best, but you are the living end.
I am here. You know, I am in this room.
From multiple eyewitness accounts, strange lights appeared in the night sky moving across the horizon, winking on and off rapidly. Suddenly, the light plunged into the ocean with an audible splash, and eyewitnesses reported an object bobbing up and down in the waves until it drifted down to the waters below.
Mm.
When the Canadian Coast Guard arrived, they saw a pale yellow light under the surface of the water, and a thick yellow foam was leaking out of it.
It's gotta go to the doctor.
The object then began moving and appeared to vanish, leaving behind only the foamy yellow substance.
Mm.
Wow. That's a cream coming from a bath.
Oh my goodness. Hello, UFO and USO Dave. Also sounds a bit like Detective Popcorn.
It did. Honestly, it did drift into Detective Popcorn, and I'm upset.
But that was the original ending to Little Mermaid, though, wasn't it? She turns into a bunch of foam.
She did. She committed suicide via sadness. But this story is interesting. Typical. The Shag Harbor UFO incident, it's one of the best, one of the most validated UFO stories that we have. Much like the Rendlesham Forest incident, there is a lot of military witnesses that said that they saw this thing. And the yellow foam is actually highly indicative of this behavior. David Fravor, if you listen to his story about the Tic Tac UFO that was saw outside of the famous video that has now come out in December 2017 of the Tic Tac UFO, if you listen to his eyewitness account in detail, he says that when he first saw this thing, it was above a foaming patch of water. And that more often than not, these UFOs cause foam because of whatever their field is around it. UFOs in water also says that that's his surmization.
Sure.
Summary. He said that the magnetic energy, the propulsion system, it makes the water foam as it goes in and out.
Okay.
Conclusion. That's the word you're looking for.
More like collusion.
We're back to Russia.
The USOs have been reported in the United States of America for decades, and in 1973, a paranormal writer with the unfortunate name of Alan Spaggett published a collection of USO stories in the Tampa Tribune.
Please, Marcus, it's Spaggett.
Ooh, Spaghetti! Ooh, very nice.
Actually, Spaggett was his chosen nom de plume.
Really?
His real name was Alan Spraggett.
So,
what's wrong with Spraggett? I mean, there's nothing wrong with anything.
I don't know how you decide that Spaggett is more Hollywood than Spraggett.
I don't know. He obviously.
Well, the way it's spelled, it does look like it's spelled Spaggett, but
it might
because
be Spaggett.
He did not put an E at the end of it like Spraggett has.
Ah, yes, okay. Spraggett has the E. That's what makes it fancy.
Yeah,
that's the European flair.
He wanted to be a common everyman.
But in this article, Spraggett wrote of an oceanographic ship from the United States named the Eltonen that took photographs 13,000 feet down into the ocean, some 1,000 miles west of Cape Horn. And from what Spraggett reported, the photographs captured an actual piece of machinery on the ocean floor featuring protruding rods that appeared as if they were antennae.
Oh, interesting.
Now, it could have merely been a sunken ship, but it matched no known machinery that the military was privy to, and no plant life nor known coral exists that deep into the ocean.
Unless it's a rebel coral, going where no coral has ever been before.
And notice, near the rebel coral, the Jeffrey Toobin continues to jerk off.
Oh, God, I gotta get another meeting. Yeah, someone's texting me. Someone's texting me. I'll finish while I'm texting. But in terms of Shag Harbor, this is very indicative of the same behavior of that same thing that happened in Shag Harbor, where the object floated along the coast for a long period of time. They said apparently it went underground and went under the water, and they were like, oh, it's crashed, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
But that apparently the U.S. military were tracking it for several days afterwards, saying that it had went up the coast because the Shag Harbor area, which is on the very end of Newfoundland, at the very the far, far east coast of Canada, that was also an outpost for our submarine area, like where we kept all our submarines and our nuclear submarines. And the Russians used to send little guys over to buzz Canadian waters to kind of see what we were up to. And so it was this, again, a highly watched part of the ocean where this floating yellow thing went through next to all submarines. They turn all the weapons system saying like, all right, we're ready to blow it up. And then it didn't do anything. They watched it lift up out of the water and shoot up into the sky.
Wow. Yep.
Spraguet also wrote about a huge pear-shaped object photographed in the Gulf Stream in 1965. And he wrote about a green phosphorescent cigar-shaped object seen by 40 people off the coast of Brazil that submerged and navigated around with ease, despite its huge size. And that phosphorescent glow, that comes again and again and again. And it of course, speaks to the magnetic theory.
Interesting. So, quick question. When was this again?
1965.
So we got the cigar shaped, and then you have your kind of your cylinder shape. It does seem like to say to believe this. It seems like everyone is explaining the same phenomenon over and over again, right?
Yes,
like
all over the world.
But what about like the triangle and all that stuff? I guess that's different.
Well, they are saying that the triangle. This is all. I mean, what is this shit? What is it? Are they ships from another galaxy? Are they interdimensional things that pop through that we kind of complete? Are they elementals? Like, are they just things that are a natural occurrence, a part of our life? Because some people say, nuts and bolts people believe that those triangles that we see are like motherships, that they come and they observe us, and that those are the nuts and bolts shit, and that the orbs is more of the elemental fashion, that maybe they are psychic projections, maybe they come from the inner earth, like the reptilians living inside of the planet Earth. Maybe they are directed, essentially unmanned vehicles, directed by the psychic notions of the giant water worms inside of the moons of Saturn.
You couldn't have said it better. I couldn't have said it better myself. You said mothership. Maybe they could help us out. Put a nipple on it.
Put a nipple on it.
Or some udders. Let us know it's the mothership.
So now that we've come to the end of it, the question we have
or
right
the beginning.
Now,
or did we just get to the beginning?
I don't even think we've started.
Well, the question is, what are these things and where do they come from? And to that, we have no definitive answer, because if there was a definitive answer, it'd be taught in fucking schools.
We'd be driving orbs right now.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be cool.
There would be the Chevy orb. You have to get it fixed all the time.
That would get me going.
But an argumentative, belligerent Scottish ufologist named Ivan Sanderson, who seemed to have quite possibly hated UFOs, had an interesting hypothesis before he died in the 70s.
He was just mad at how hard UFOs made him work.
Okay.
Ivan hypothesized that since the Earth is covered in 75% water and is on average 2 miles deep, then it's not impossible to think that intelligent subaqueous beings could have evolved and built underwater civilizations at the bottom of the sea long before humans even walked upright.
And we stand up here all day, walking around, and they're down in there. They're shitting on the fish.
Whoa, they're crapping on the fish. That's horrible.
I met a pink woman the other day. She is lovely. I love her finger.
Why are you so angry, Scottish man?
I hate the fly. I cannot fly.
No, not yet.
Well, in his view, it took humanity 300 million years of evolution to achieve space travel. And intelligent subaqueous beings have had double the amount of time to evolve because they didn't have to worry about evolving on land as well as evolving in the sea. Therefore, there's no reason to think that if they exist, they wouldn't have achieved space travel 150 million years ago. But that's assuming that they somehow evolved hands and didn't just become dolphins.
Whoa.
But if we extrapolate from this theory, then it's entirely possible that the reason why UFOs are seen most often near water is not because they're coming from the sky. Rather, they're coming from the ocean and any other body of water deep enough to hide a settlement. In other words, it's entirely possible that the call is coming from inside the house.
Yeah, bro.
Wow.
You see, you do end up having to talk naturally faster when you talk about UFOs to keep people with like close to you physically.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I love it. USO.
Wow, we did it.
Submerged objects that are not identified.
We are That is what they are. That is what they are. It's just the way you say it that seems to be like you're being credulous.
No, submerged objects that are unidentified.
My entire
what they
life,
are.
It's called stretching time. So my whole life.
This is, to me, one of the most interesting topics within ufology. I think that we are going to see how this plays out next month. We're going to do a bit of an update because next
month. If it happens, though, it might not happen.
They might have to give it to us. They might have to give it to us simply for PR reasons. They might have to give some version of a UFO report. We're supposed to get this shit from the Pentagon, whatever it means. The Defense Department's going to come out. They're coming to clean. And you know how transparent they can be.
Well, that's
You've
why.
Seen the clothes on some of these generals.
Well, those are kind of transparent if the person's writing a book about them. It's amazing how fast those pants can drop. Looking at you, Mr. Petraeus.
Nice.
Wow, that's such a good
Got
diss.
Him.
Everyone who's a total political nerd would get that, but also truly the Pentagon audit, talk to your representatives. We need to audit the Pentagon because
we do.
Where is the money going? It's never happened, and they have a lot of our hard-earned tax dollars.
They do
so much.
But the U.S. government is very actively interested in how these things can fly from air to the water. They want technology from this. Who knows? There's a lot of people saying that they might have a chunk of a craft somewhere.
Yeah,
a lot. It's a lot. Harry
Reid was the one who
said
that he found that like they had a craft and they wouldn't let him see it.
We'll see. We'll see what this all means, because in the end, we haven't seen evidence of this within our like domestic technology, civilian technology. Also, it would explain that if they did have this technology, that's why we're seeing so many orbs. Because they're trying to figure a way to do it. Maybe there are fucking Call of Duty players sitting somewhere in the Dulce base with helmets on, shooting, using their mind to shoot orbs into space. Because, and you know what that would be? Super killer. Because you know what it also means? We don't have to worry about doing cardio anymore.
Oh,
and from now on, we're just sitting.
Absolutely.
Every day, getting closer and closer to Wally.
Yep. And don't forget to check out the new season of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Gulags. And I think that'll be fantastic. And thanks for supporting all the shows here. We have, what are you guys working on with Beastie Boys with No Dogs in Space? Speaking of puppies in space, No Dogs in Space. You guys on Beastie Boys, almost wrapping that up.
Yeah, we last week we released part 5, which is an episode devoted mostly to Paul's Boutique, the Beastie Boy, like the Beastie Boys magnum opus. And next week we're going to conclude the series, Beastie Boys Part 6, where we're going to cover the three fantastic albums they released in the 90s. Check Your Head, Ill Communication, and Hello Nasty.
That is great.
Awesome.
I'm fucking very excited. Last episode of Dunecast.
Yeah.
The last episode of LPN Deep Dives Dune is coming out on Monday. It has been what a long, strange journey it's been. And now we're back. We got all fucking check out all the rest of the shows. Buy our weed.
Yes, we can go.
And Weedon in Santa Ana and Boulevard in San Diego. Please buy our weed vape carts. Get them out there. Put them in your lungs. Give them to your children. Give them to the children.
Don't give them to the children. You can't even legally entertain that idea. Please don't give them to the children. 21 years or older.
Speaking of giving weed to children, Last Prisoner Project, we've been working with them very
closely.
Again,
they don't give weed to children.
They don't give weed to children.
They're actually a fantastic group of
people. We love them. We're trying to get these last people that are in jail for weed. We're trying to get them out of fucking jail because they don't belong there. And we're working with them. Look them up. We are going to be working very closely with them more and more over the next year.
Absolutely. I had a chance to go to an event with the Last Prisoner Project this past week. Everyone was absolutely fantastic. I met some great people, and it is important to humanize and put a face on the detention of innocent American citizens who deserve to be treated with respect. All right, so we will be working with LPP in the future, and we're working with them now.
Absolutely.
We absolutely can't wait. And we'll have some interviews on Ableton's Top Hat as well, so we'll get into the nitty-gritty of the nightmare that is the criminal justice system in this country. And, everything else, thank you all so much for supporting us.
Yeah.
When can we announce that we're going to do shows?
I don't know.
Very soon. We're going to be doing
okay.
So many fucking shows this fall and late summer around America. We're going to be doing, we can't announce it just exactly which cities we're coming to, but we're doing a gigantic fucking tour. We're going to be starting back doing shows in fucking August, and we're going to be going on tour for the rest of our fucking lives. So we'll be coming to a town near you sometime in the next year.
So excited.
We can't wait. And of course, we will see you in Colorado.
We'll see you in Colorado.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. Hope you're doing well out there and staying safe. Hail yourself.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gein.
Magustalations.
Hail me. Don't just watch the skies. watch the oceans.
Yeah, now
and
you
then
watch
your living room. Watch, no, Superstore's canceled. So many things to watch. There's so much content out there. But watch the ocean, most of all.
That's so much to watch now, but all right.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.